This is your captain speaking. I'm Arno Jutten, captain of Holland America Line MS Maasdam. You're listening to the SoCal Restaurant Show on AM 830 KLAA.
And welcome back. It is the SoCal Restaurant Show, and we're here with you every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, right here on AM 830 KLAA, the home of Angels Baseball. And you can also catch us on the AM 830 Angels app. I'm Andy Harris, the executive producer and co-host of the show. Glad to have you out there. And my colleague, Chef Andrew Gruhl, will be joining us a little later in the show with his usual Ask the Chef segment. And we're going to be talking about a fairly controversial subject, and it's what to do with tipping. So we will get into that, and we're enthusiastically presented each and every week by Melissa's World Variety Produce and West Coast Prime Meats. We're journeying back up to Paso Robles, which is now a wonderful wine destination, some incredible wineries, some wonderful food, destination resorts like the Allegretto Vineyard Resort, which is an incredible property. And we're speaking with a guy that kind of started it all off, that being Gary Eberle. So it is a pleasure to welcome Gary back to the show. Gary, picking up the conversation, you made the decision several years ago that kind of the sweet spot for you was, maybe 30,000 cases a year, which puts you, you know, that's kind of a mid-sized winery. Is always in family situations, you know, particularly when it comes to money, this is where things get a little more complicated. Some of your other family members were really pressing you to increase production, and you said, no, I want to stay where I am. Tell us a little bit about that, because, again, it just shows your commitment to purpose.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had so many friends in the industry make what I call Mickey a run at the brass ring. And they've expanded, and they wind up expanding beyond their ability to market. And they wind up losing their winery. Plus, frequently, you get to a certain point, and it's hard for a winemaker, one person, really to keep track of so much that's going on. And you know, I never got into this business to be rich. I got into this business to make wine, to make good, great wine. And at 30,000 cases, trust me, we're one of the most profitable wineries in the state. If you look at our bottom line on percentage basis, we do fine. And people, we don't charge for tasting. Mr. Mondavi was one of my three mentors. We don't charge for tasting. We do complimentary tours through the caves. You know, Mondavi, you had to take a tour of the winery before you could even taste wine.
Great marketing, Gary. Again, you know, in terms of a mentor, Robert Mondavi, you always call him Mr. Mondavi, he certainly is someone to aspire to.
I'm very fortunate, and I'm at a time in my life where I'm just having fun. You talked about my succession. I don't have any children, but I have a winemaker whose name is Chris Eberle.
No relation.
Yeah,
no relation.
Yeah, we've explored all the things we could, and we have no common relative that we can find. But I can't leave my winery to my two dogs, and my ex-wives are happy where they are doing whatever they're doing. So I have set up a corporation or a trust so that my key employees will get the winery on my death. And with Chris being Chris Eberle, you don't even have to change the signs or the name on the label.
Gary, truly incredible. Now, speaking about your key employees, many of your key employees have been with you for years and years. Tell us a little bit
decades.
About that, because that's kind of unusual, too.
I think I treat my people well. I know I pay them very well. We pay top dollar in the industry. We full medical, dental, optical. Any money they put into an IRA or 401k, I match it 100% at the end of the year. And we have bonuses based on performance. And I'm not quite as svelte as I was when I played football. And I'm not missing any meals. I'm living way beyond where I ever thought I would growing up as a kid. Back in Pittsburgh, a house with painted plywood floors. So except for my years at Penn State playing football, the last 10 years really have been the best years of my life.
Gary, that is just absolutely terrific. Now, getting back to Mr. Mondavi and his mentorship and his influence that he had on you, you mentioned something very key in terms of as a marketing approach, not to charge for your tastings, which, again, very special. But there's something else that you took as a guide for Mr. Mondavi. With Robert Mondavi, it was not the Robert Mondavi Winery. It was always elevating the profile, the global profile of Napa Valley, and to a lesser extent, telling Europe that California had pretty serious wines. You have done the same thing for Paso Robles. It's not Eberle Winery, Eberle Winery, Eberle Winery. It's Paso is a destination wine region. Tell us a little bit more about that, because you really didn't need to do that. You know, you're a pioneer in your own right. You have a brand that's sold, I believe, in over 23 states in the United States and internationally. You know, why is it important for you to elevate your colleagues?
Again, it was something I learned from Mr. Mondavi. I mean, I really wish I could have had the impact on the California and even the national wine industry in the United States that Mr. Mondavi did. He was, I mean this in the most complimentary sense, he was the P.T. Barnum of our industry. He recognized that for Robert Mondavi Winery to really succeed, Napa had to become famous. And I recognized it from him. I didn't invent this. You know, I knew that from my winery, in Paso Robles, where I came here, there were three wineries, and they'd all been here since Prohibition. I needed Paso Robles to succeed for Eberle Winery to succeed. I mean, I remember going out in the 70s to New York and Miami and places, and I'd say, I'm in Paso Robles, and I'd say, is that in Texas, or is that in Baja, California? And now Paso Robles is known nationally and internationally.
No, you know, Gary, clearly it's a destination.
For me, it was a chicken or an egg thing. I mean, if Paso didn't succeed, Eberle Winery was not going to succeed. And so I get a lot of credit for doing what I had to do to make my winery succeed.
All good. Gary, you have two winery ambassadors that you referred to earlier, but we need to give them a little bit more credit. And this is your two black standard poodles, Sangiovese and Barbera. Where we can find you on many afternoons on the porch at the entrance to your winery, meeting guests and just chatting. Sangiovese and Barbera also have the run of the property. Tell us a little bit more about them, because again, they just add to the family environment of the winery. Yeah. And as I saw, Gary, they're very smart dogs.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was a kid, I always had a dog, but they were mutts. They were, you know, rescue dogs. And when I finally came to Paso and I had some money and my wife was teaching, and you know, we weren't rich by any means, but, and I said, I'm going to get a pedigree dog. And I went out and I got an Irish setter, because they are just so beautiful. I mean, honest to God, it's one of the prettiest dogs. But I found out I've had heads of cabbage smarter than an Irish setter.
It's true.
Every morning you had to teach you how to drink water. So I did what I did for 11 years going to school. I went to the books. I said, my criteria is smart, not shedding, no dander, a dog that I can trust, and a dog that, you know, stays around. You know, you could never lose an Irish setter, because all you had to do is follow the hair that fell out of them. But the poodles, this is my, Sancho is my seventh, and Barbera is the eighth. I've had black standard poodles since 1980, all named after wines, and they are smart. I've never had an incident. They just, people fall in love with them. And They buy Sangiovese and they buy Barbera based on the dogs, damn it.
Gary, nothing wrong with that. Now, another pioneering thing you did with your winery when you first established it is I do believe you had the first wine caves in the Paso area. And from an engineering point of view, that must not have been easy. Tell us about the wine caves. And again, we recommend to our listeners when they do the winery tour at Eberle, you got to see the caves because, you know, this was you were way ahead of your time there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I didn't invent. I mean, I had friends like Gary Andrus and Randy Dunn up in Napa and Warmarski, you know, and they were starting to do the caves, and they would all say, geez, you know how much we save per barrel per year from evaporative, you know, because you want a constant temperature, and you don't want any air movement, because air moving over the barrels causes wicking, pulls moisture out. So I came down here and I said, geez, I got to, because the winery's up on a hill. So we just bored underneath it and tied it into the winery proper. And all of our barrels, every wine we make is aged in the caves except our Muscat Canelli, which never sees a barrel. So we save probably about four bottles of wine per barrel per year. And 1,600 barrels, it's a lot of wine, and it's free. Now, the Angels are a little angry at me. I cut into their cut.
The Angel share, yes.
Yeah. So, but it works fine. And you know, I mean, when I was, I mean, I still have the largest, I believe I still have the largest wine caves in the south of the bay. And there are a lot of, you know, for 20 years, I was the only one that had wine caves down here. Now there's a dozen or so, maybe less than that, but and they're all, with one or two exceptions, much larger than we are, but we have the most expensive caves because we don't age just our premium wines or our special wines. Everything, the rosé, all of the whites, everything is aged in the caves because it's the proper way. Constant temperature, constant humidity, no air movement. It's just perfect. And there's no, I don't have to cool it. We're down 35 foot under the winery. It's constant temperature. The only expense I have down there is electricity for lighting it. And it's just a nice place.
Well, Gary, definitely a nice attraction when people are visiting Eberle Winery. And we do want to recommend to our listeners when they're up in the Paso area, this is a must stop on the tour. There are upgrades that you can get in terms of spending more time in the cave, all sorts of special activities. It is eberlewinery.com. That's EBERLEwinery.com. We didn't really have time to talk about it, but if you wonder why the wild boar is on the label, in German, Eberle is a boar. So, and you'll also see some boar fountains and sculpture that are part of the property. As we can say, Gary Eberle is definitely a classic vintage in Paso Robles. Gary, thanks for the time. As I say, really enjoyed spending time with you, and you can be sure that we will resume the next time I'm up in your backyard, but something very, very special that we want to share with our listeners. You are listening to the SoCal Restaurant Show. When we return, we're talking pizza, because Pizza City Fest LA is coming up at the end of the month. It is the SoCal Restaurant Show. We're proudly presented by Melissa's World Variety Produce and West Coast Prime Meats. We'll be back. They say, Brandy, you're a fine girl. You're a fine girl. What a good wife you would be. Such a fine girl. Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea. Brandy wears a braided chain made of finest silver from the north of Spain, a locket